Blog Talk Radio.
To the river I am going, bringing sins I cannot bear. Come and cleanse me, come forgive me, Lord, I need to meet you there.
Closer, Lord, I need to meet you there. waiting. Jesus longs to meet you there. He is calling. He is waiting. Jesus longs to meet you there.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night. That means it's time for the Constitution Hour. Had to play a little bit of that Brian Dorkson there. Hope everybody can hear me all right. Just had a bit of a rough weekend for me. Just angry. And trying not to let that get to me too much. Got back on some of the forum boards and been talking to some of the people. And, you know, it just occurred to me in a discussion I was having with another young man on there. Young man. I'm assuming he's a young man. And I'm not. But we don't listen to one another. We don't understand what the other person is saying. It's almost as if we're having a resurgence of the Tower of Babel, where God confused the languages. We are speaking the same language, a variation of English, and yet we're having trouble communicating. We cannot communicate. This gentleman and I were discussing the current state of affairs within our government, within our society. And he is a Democrat, and he has no problem with forced taxation that I see as nothing more or less than theft. And he continued to go on all of these various rabbit trails, if you will, about, you know, there's only a small amount of fraud, waste, and abuse, and welfare, and this and that and the other, and, you know, all of these things. He, I mean, trotted out every argument out of the whole bag of tricks, and I thought, you know, my God, am I being this obtuse? Am I being this difficult to comprehend? Is my usage of the English language, is my grammar and composition so poorly comprised that I just cannot seem to get across to this individual what it is I'm talking about? And I don't believe that was the case, but perhaps it was. But I think part of it is that we have a system that is a bifurcated political party. And bifurcated means a main trunk that's split into two branches, for lack of a better description for you. Something that is bifurcated. It's split into two factions. One faction calls itself Republican. The other calls itself Democrat. And in the midst of those two factions, we get mired down in a whole myriad of different pet issues. Homosexual marriage, abortion, welfare, immigration, the war in Afghanistan, Guantanamo, term limits, the debt ceiling, the national debt, balancing the budget, the Supreme Court justices, and a whole list of other things. And truly, honestly, none of that crap matters. It just doesn't. If we follow a really basic principle. Now, you and I, we've talked about this before. That basic principle is found in the original founding document, the Declaration of Independence. It's the only place it's found. Now, some will say that it's actually a declaration of war. And that's not true. It was a declaration of independence. It's exactly what it said it was. And in that declaration, those famous lines, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable," can't be signed away, can't mortgage them, "rights. Chief among these is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Most of you already know that that was property originally, and should not have been changed. It should have remained property. Now, my counterpart in this discussion tried to tell me that, you know, the Founding Fathers certainly did not believe that all men were created equal. They certainly believed that all wealthy, let me see if I can remember how he put this, all wealthy, aristocratic, land-owning, white, non-Catholic, Protestant males were created equal. And I thought, you know, there really is no point in me continuing my conversation with you. And I calmly tried to express to him that what I'm discussing is not some return to the days of slavery. What I'm discussing, what we should be talking about, is not homosexual rights, women's rights, abortion rights, health care rights, civil rights, blue rights, purple rights, illegal alien rights, immigration rights. It's really simple, guys. Individual rights. The right not to be encroached upon by another, and everyone in society is seen as an individual. And every individual has exactly the same rights as every other individual. There is no special group. There would be no special rights, no special laws or legislation need be passed. There is no need, never was a need, for a Civil Rights Act. Now, before that's misconstrued, we didn't need to pass a Civil Rights Act. What we needed to do is follow what was already written. Follow the guidelines that we were given in that very first document. It didn't require these massive changes. It didn't even require a 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment was an end around what some saw as an error or a shortcoming in the Constitution. I don't believe that for a moment. And I'll tell you why. Congress has the authority to admit people into the country or to deny them entry into the country. Congress alone has that authority to admit people into the several states. What Congress lacks, or lacked, still does, in my opinion, is the ability to make that individual a citizen of a particular state. And I think this is a really a good subject that we should discuss. I mean, imagine a country, and I'm sure that there are many here that can imagine, they lived through it, where certain states decide they don't want to allow Asians to live in their state. They may leave it up to the counties. Who knows? Do you believe that every state and every county in the United States is going to adopt that same stance? It's pretty doubtful. More likely what would happen is you would find one or two, or maybe even a handful, 10, hell, maybe even half, would outlaw admitting some race, whether it be black. Hell, they may not want to admit whites. You know, I don't know. But we would find an equilibrium. It's not about any of these stupid ideologies that have been pressed into our minds over the years. The whole, I mean, when you look at the race division that occurred during the, from the time the end of the Civil War onward, you know, a lot of people would say, well, the states were able to. No, they were actually forced to do something. And really, you had kind of the end of state ownership of the land, state sovereignty, states' rights. They were suppressed under the dictates of a federal central government. But there's something in that Constitution long before this came about that said citizens of a particular state, let's say California, let's say in our scenario that California is the only state in the union that has decided to allow Asians to live in California. I'm not saying that they have that authority or should ever have that authority, but let's say for the sake of argument of this little experiment that California, out of all the states, every other state has disallowed state citizenship to anyone that's Asian. California has embraced the Asians and they're covered up with them. Well, that doesn't mean that those Californians cannot travel throughout all the rest of the states in the United States and live in every one of those states, take up residence, domicile in those states. Because there is a clause in that Constitution that clearly states that a citizen of one of the several states shall enjoy all the privileges and immunities in every state. Sorry, it's kind of convoluted getting to that point. So all that really was necessary was to enforce the damned Constitution to begin with. This was a topic that for me was difficult to approach with some of my customers who are black, to ask them, how do you see civil rights, and how do you, where, what's the difference between civil rights and constitutional rights? See, because for me, a constitutional right simply means that it is a right that is specifically enumerated in the Constitution. The Constitution itself does not give rise to the existence of that right. It doesn't give that right force. It simply acknowledges the existence of it. And if everyone within the United States is equal as individuals, I really don't see why we need to go around dividing ourselves into these little factious groups and asking for special attention. Because that's certainly what's happening. And I would go a step further that had the law, people should have been lobbying to enforce the doggone law. But, you know, we have this problem where we interpret the law to say something other than what it plainly says on its face. And then there's that, well, you know, the Declaration of Independence, it's not law. I said, yeah, you're right. It's the It's the foundational premise upon which our entire body of law rests, right? Because without that Declaration of Independence, then you have kind of what we've got now, isn't it? Just a morass of garbage. And that's really what we ought to be looking at. You know, there's this big to-do, another great example on this forum. One of the members posted an article about, and forgive me, I'm going to let you know ahead of time, I'm pretty well done with the political correctness garbage. So anyway, there was a couple in the UK that owned their home, and they started a business doing a bed and breakfast, and they had two queers come along, two homosexuals, who wanted to rent a room, and they refused because it is against their beliefs. Hey, it's their home. It's their business. It's their right to refuse service. Well, the courts didn't see it that way. Now, one of the posters in this forum, who is an atheist, said that while he agrees that the court in the UK was completely wrong and that these people have a right to decide who they do and do not want to rent a room to, he thought their reasoning was stupid. Okay, that's cool. Whatever. I don't have a problem with that. You're a fool. I think you're a fool, but at least you've got some reason and logic behind siding with the homeowners. You have an opinion. You think they're foolish. That's okay. Comments later, they're still arguing. He agreed with the guy that posted the article that the people were treated wrongly. And 83 comments later, they're still arguing. People telling this guy, hey, you know, everyone in this forum is agreed with you. Why do you keep arguing? He's so blinded by hatred of homosexuals and so defensive over being a Christian that he doesn't realize that on this particular segment of this particular problem, everyone on the board agrees with him. They're all in agreement, and yet the argument continues. This is the lack of communication that I'm talking about. And that's why I think it's important that we get back to all men are created equal. And instead of arguing, you can't do this or you shouldn't do that. I'm sorry. You don't have the right to infringe upon my person or my property, period. It's just that simple. It's really just that simple. We're getting to the point, and I think many people out there realize that. We're getting to the point of what Rand Paul spoke about on the floor of the Senate not too terribly long ago when he asked about compulsory service as a physician. He said, if you can force someone to purchase health insurance. Can you also force me to provide that service to someone against my will? Is that any different than the bakery shop out in California that was forced to bake a wedding cake for two lesbians? Granted, I recognize that providing medical services and providing a cake are quite different and can have quite a dramatic difference in impact to an individual. But it's really not, that's really not what we're looking at. It's the principle. It's the principle of the thing. Never mind that the two women are lesbian. Never mind that the couple over in the UK is homosexual. That is not the important aspect of the story. And it does not matter. They could have been a happily married man and woman. That couple could have looked at them and said, you know what? We don't want to rent you a room. They have that right. Their reasons are not subject to negotiation, speculation, or government oversight. That's the point. You know, my mother used to tell me when I was a young man, little turkey, two wrongs don't make a right. And she was correct. Now, the government interfering with two individuals or three or four or ten and their right to contract is just dead wrong. Can you imagine if someone were to open an all-white nightclub? I don't believe that they'd get much business, and I don't know that, well, I wouldn't want to be around the nightclub anyway, but you get what I'm saying. I don't think I'd want to be around the crowd that would hang out there, but nonetheless, it's their prerogative. It's no different than, say, Augusta. Oh, my God, yeah, they would have an absolute explosion. But that's the point. You know, it's like Augusta National Golf Club. It's an all-male club. You know what? There are all-female clubs, too. Why have we lost our minds? I mean, what's happened here? You see, you give just one little inch on this nonsense, and it turns into, you know, every proclivity and oddity, everything that makes us different and unique from one another becomes a cause. That's just wrong. We don't need that, and it is dividing us as a society into smaller and smaller factions. It's splitting us up, driving wedges between us, instead of us becoming closer. You know, I don't care what my tax dollars are spent on. They're stolen from me. Period. I don't care if they're using that money to build homeless shelters for little old ladies who used to be nuns and cared for orphans, or if they're building government-funded crack houses for illegal immigrants. I don't care. Stop stealing. Stop. Because, you see, when we do these little things, we're elevating, giving special attention, privileges to one little group at the expense of the rights of every other individual. You know, the health care thing. And again, it's not health care, it's health insurance. You're forcing everyone to buy health insurance. And it's kind of like the old, Miranda warning. If you cannot afford one, one will be provided for you. Really? Well, look at what is going on. You're diminishing those people. You're punishing people for the misfortune of others. That's really what's going on here. The idea, the concept may be as noble as anything. I don't believe it is, but that's a whole nother argument. The point is that if we saw the people who have their own health insurance, if we saw them as absolutely equal to those that don't have health insurance, then there is no way in God's green earth that you could come to the conclusion that we should force them to subsidize these other people. Or you could turn that on its head and say, well, you know what? If these people can't afford to have insurance, then no one is allowed to have insurance. That may be a better solution. And we've got Miss Linda on the phone from California. How are you, Miss Linda?
Fine, Ron. Thanks. When you're talking about the individual rights and the unalienable rights, I don't know if I sent you the one that came across my desk today or yesterday. The gentleman was speaking on a video about it, primarily the Second Amendment right, and he said when these people like Schumer and all these other people and they start talking about compromise, you either have a right or you don't. You don't compromise on any of this stuff, because whether they're telling you
exactly
you have when you talk about like a 10 round, 17 round, whatever, 9, they'll say, okay, now you only need 7, now you only need 5. This is craziness.
No.
What you're doing when you compromise is you are handing it over to them as a privilege from the government, and that's what you're doing. You are bargaining away. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
You're converting a right into a privilege, and that is,
yes,
or a,
and that's not,
you know.
And then you've
to
lost.
Me,
you've lost. You're done. It's over.
To me,
that was
one of the sleight of hand things that was done with the civil rights movement.
Sure.
I just don't care if other people, they're that damn foolish that they can't see the truth.
They can't see it. The point is, when you go back to the original intent of the founding and you think about what Thomas Jefferson said and what the others were saying, especially James Madison, when you talked about life, liberty, and property, and you're right, it shouldn't have been changed. When it comes to our rights, we have the right to be left alone by our government unless we're breaking bones and picking pockets. That's my deal. So, I mean, it's just simple. And Dr. Paul is correct, and David Barton is correct. You've just got to follow the Constitution. We don't need immigration reform. We need immigration enforcement. We have everything in place.
Well, that's just it. It's been there. All this legislation is so unnecessary.
Right.
It's as if we have the inability to comprehend the
right.
English language. And that's what I was telling this guy. And I told him, I said, you know, I'm sure there are a few fanatical idiots out there who would love to revert back to the days of slavery. But I'm not one of those. And neither is anyone that I know.
Right.
But this is not about gay rights or women's rights or civil rights.
Or black.
It's
right.
about individual rights with no distinction.
Right.
No distinction. We're not gonna distinguish between white, brown, gay, male, female.
Right.
No distinction, sir. Or ma'am. None. You are here. You're a physical, living, breathing human being. There is no distinction that you are equal with everybody else within the line of my sight and in this country. Okay? And, I mean, does that make sense? No special laws, no special civil rights, no, you know, just common respect and the same rights and
right.
laws for everyone. No programs for single mothers, no welfare, no old age pension programs, no special programs for retired congressmen. You know, I mean, is this so difficult for people to grasp? The right to rise and fall on one's own merits and ability without government intrusion.
Well, look, you've got the progressives, you've got the people who have completely twisted everything that was ever written by the founders, practically, especially with the Commerce Clause, which boils my backside a lot. And I'm sure it does yours as well.
I have to laugh. This very guy that I was debating, he was right on the cusp of saying, you know, and he actually did say that, you know, he said, where are traffic lights in the Constitution? I don't see them mentioned in there. Are those unconstitutional? He said, you know, we're not supposed to have our lives ruled by one damn document. I said, boy, howdy, you are so right. And you're so wrong. I said, well, I hate to break it to you, but traffic is called commerce. If you go look up the definition of traffic, you would see that commerce is definitely moving persons and products for
right.
profit is called commerce or
what's
traffic. So regulating commerce, I believe there's a commerce clause in there. That traffic lights would fall under that. I said, but you hit on a key point, and that is that the Constitution was not designed to govern every aspect of the daily lives of the
right.
Americans that lived within the United States of America. That was not its purpose. Its purpose was that it created a form of government. And that government was also not designed to dictate and rule over the
yeah.
lives of everyone within the geographical landmass known as the collection of free states, otherwise the United mm-hmm. States of America. No, we had state government and local government for that. And as little of that as we could tolerate, hopefully, but, you know, it hasn't worked out
right.
that way.
No.
So then the next argument is, well, but, you know, this is how our government has evolved, and, you know, this is the way it's always going to be. Well, horse crap. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, okay, now you sound like a defeatist, right? You know, I mean, no, but that's not the way it works. Just because my generation and previous generations have allowed the situation to get all the way to the point that it's at, it does not mean that I have surrendered all my rights, that I'm no longer a human being, that I'm some kind of other entity, and that I can't recapture and reestablish my rights as a human being. to be equal. I don't want to be better than anybody else. Not in the eyes of the law. I don't want to be above, elevated. You know, I wouldn't mind being a millionaire. There's a lot of things I could do, a lot of people I could help. My family,
sure.
Included.
But,
right, but that doesn't mean that I want to see myself as better than everyone else, or that I have some kind of special privileges, or that I get some special treatment, you know? No.
Right, and you don't, and you also don't want to see yourself like the progressives see all these groups and factions as a victim, because that's what they're doing. They're pointing out, you know, oh, look at these poor
people.
We've got to help these poor people, and it's just, I'm telling you, because nobody understands how things were prior to the Civil War. Apparently, they just can't figure out how to read it. That's what the churches were for. That's what neighborhoods were for. They helped people who were less fortunate, and it worked fine. I mean, look what they've done to this country. They've turned almost half of it into food stamp recipients. It's crazy.
Well, sure. You know, this guy. Actually, I mean, I was just like really was expressing how fabulous a president FDR was.
Oh, God.
And how FDR single-handedly created, for the first time in the history of the world, a middle class.
You love me.
Oh, my God.
And I'm
Did
like,
you go nuts?
Holy crap, dude. Okay. I'm like, you know, I can't even type fast enough to even remotely begin to explain this to you in a forum. I mean, you know, we need to, like, have therapy sessions over adult beverages for, like, the next 6 years. So that we can go through the history. Because I got news for you. I mean, I got genealogy. My family going back to, you know, the 1735 here in the U.S. And every damn one of them on my grandparents' side, on my mother's side, were farmers.
No.
And I hate to tell you, but when a farmer owns 200-300 acres, he's middle class. Compared to, the, you know, folks that are living in the slums in the big cities, especially. And I'm talking about in the 1800s. I'm not talking about today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that was, they were certainly middle class. And the idea, and that's the other thing that pisses me off from time to time.
Uh-huh.
The very idea that somehow there's this secret measurement bar. Now, we're not really sure where it is. I don't know where in the hell they hide this thing. But the Democrats evidently have this bar, and everyone they meet, they measure up or they don't. You take, for example, the folks that were living up in the Blue Ridge Mountains prior to the Blue Ridge Parkway, which was quite a feat in and of itself. And that Blue Ridge Parkway was one of those FDR make work projects. And, oh, look at all it's doing for the people up in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's going to bring traffic through here. People come up, they have souvenirs, you know, Cherokee Casino, and all of this stuff is going to happen. Look at all the great things. But what they're not looking at is look at all the people that you've displaced from your homes.
Mm-hmm.
You've cheated them out of their property. My wife and I were looking at the land documents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's one guy, he's got 100 acres and he gets paid $600. Here's another guy that's got 50 acres and he gets paid $6,000. Right? So, I mean, you know, you understand there's some crony crap going on. But what none of them ever really can stop to consider, did you ask any of these people if they wanted electricity in their homes? Do they even understand the implications of that?
You have to be
and what it means to changing their way of life. You know, but all they do is they see these poor people that are living in just these deplorable conditions that they chose, by the way, and their ancestors chose.
Right.
I mean, you know, most of them came here from other countries and probably thought they had it pretty damn good by comparison to what they had. I mean, you know,
sure.
I don't know. They chose their lot. My grandfather chose to be a farmer. Nobody put a gun to his head and made him become a farmer. And he was
right.
happy. It's what he embraced it. It
so
was who he was. And so was, you know, a whole line. I mean, my God, there's a steady line of farmers on my mother's side going back to 1735, for
yeah,
God's sake.
Wow.
So, you know, this isn't just something that, but a lot of these people were forced out of their lives, their livelihoods, and
mm-hmm.
forced into cities through many of these government programs that were supposed to help them, right? And many of them committed suicide.
Oh, my God.
Many of them became alcoholics. They were depressed. I mean, you know, we just don't, we just cannot monkey with this kind
right.
of a,
and,
you know, you just well, can't go in and force someone to improve their life and you think you're helping them, and you may be helping some of them.
You are a little
but some of them, you may be giving them a death sentence. We don't get
well,
to decide that. That's why charity works.
Right. And here's the thing. When you, I kind of am comparing apples to oranges, but I think the theology is the same. You know, when you look at the FDR people or the people who did this to the Blue Ridge Mountain people, I think some of these folks just like to be in control of everything, like the Agenda 21 crowd. And they may go under the guise of helping people, you know, just like many progressives do to get their way and to have more authoritarian rule over people. But when you look at what Stalin did and when he displaced people, they starved them. And then after all that was said and done, then what do you think that the number one basic social problem could have been in Russia for decades after all that? Alcoholism. There was more vodka consumed because people were depressed. Everything
well,
was
sure.
So this
well,
is the
look,
result of this crap.
You know, if you go out and read a book like, you know, John Perkins' Confessions of an Economic Hitman, right? One of the things that he talked about, one of the biggest sellers, especially in South and Central America, was electricity. They would come in and tell these, you know, tin pot dictators, hey, look, we're going to make you rich beyond your wildest dreams, and you're going to be a hero because you're going to bring electricity to your people. So here's the deal. We're going to loan you the money. We've already drawn up the plans to build the power generation plant, and here's the plans. We've got the loan documents. Everything's set out. All you got to do is sign here, and you're a millionaire. And the people are going to love you because you're going to bring electricity to their homes. Okay. Now, I got to thinking about this the other day. See, this was going on in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. Well, you know why? It was because we'd already done that shit here at home.
Mm-hmm.
We'd already created the Tennessee Valley Authority and the Hoover Dam, and, you know, we'd electrified the whole country, whether they wanted it or not. And, you know, it's, oh, yeah, they'll bring you electric lights and just put this little meter up right here on your house. And, you know, well, you know, then the next thing you know, in comes the coal company. And, by God, the farmer, well, now he's got an electric bill. Well, how am I going to pay for that? you know, it's one thing leads to another. It's just...
Sure.
Damn it. And we're still doing it.
Oh, I know.
We're still doing only just on a different scale.
When you talked the other night on Mikey's show and you said that, because you were in that forum, that chat forum, and talking about economics, and that you had mentioned that economics, if any kind of economics, is actually theory.
Yeah, it's all theory.
Some have proved actually to work very well, so and others work horribly or fail miserably, whichever.
Sure.
You know, I don't like Keynes' model because that's what I believe we're under now. I would much rather have von Mises. I mean, any day of the week in a true free market system is what he would advocate. And real capitalism, and I know this country hasn't seen all that without any, you know, of all the bells and whistles with the Fed Reserve and the corporatization and the corporate fascism. We haven't been free of that, and that's a shame. I mean, I don't believe it's ever existed.
It has never existed in our lifetimes, and it's
right.
never existed in the lifetime of the United States of America. The you know closest thing you got to it in the United States of America was before it was the U.S. when it was Native Americans, and that was it.
True, but I mean, because we had people like Hamilton, but I think prior to Lincoln, we had maybe a smattering of capitalism.
But what I mean by that, though, okay, yep, we had, no doubt there was capitalism, but you didn't have that free market capitalism because you had government subsidies, you had tariffs.
Yep.
I mean, you had all this stuff going on, okay, one way or another. Government precipitates the necessity to mm-hmm. take production out of the economy.
And government
government is little more than a freaking sponge, and a big one at that. And it sucks productivity
out of society.
Well, it certainly does.
It sucks wealth out too.
This is why, if you go back, look, you know, you go back to the old models, go back to the very early models of government. Well, they were conquerors. They had to go out and conquer mm-hmm. new territories. Why? Because they had to steal, right?
Right.
They had to go in and slash and burn and steal everything of value and all the foodstuffs, which of course was valuable,
mm-hmm.
to feed the government. Why? Because the government, if it needs one thing to exist, it needs an army. Okay? So
right.
in order for the 535 to exist, they've got to have an army. And those army guys are pretty tough, especially if they get hungry. And if they don't get fed, then, you know, they're out of here. So you got to figure out a way to feed them. Well, that's how money was really first invented. The first coins that were carried were by the Chinese armies.
Oh, okay.
It was a way for military to be paid and to be fed in far-flung areas that were not necessarily under the control of the central government at the time.
Wow.
And without having to have a huge caravan of pots, pans, cook stoves, and all of the various
mm-hmm.
foodstuffs that would be required to feed an army of 30,000 or 50,000 or 100,000. They could give them
mm-hmm.
a few gold coins, and they could go into the villages or the towns, and they could buy things to eat. They could exchange their coins. So that was really the first usage of what we think of as hard money. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I guess with all this stuff that we're facing and what they're doing to us and trying to do to us, how the hell do we get out of this mess and how do we fix it? Or if
well,
we could?
I say it again. There's two ways I see for this to go. And one I have zero hope of, and the other, you know, is inevitable. So one is for people to just say no.
No.
We're not going to do it.
Stop feeding.
Non-compliance.
Stop feeding the beast.
You're going to see, and I think we'll see more of that. There's been more talk of that lately.
Yeah.
Especially with the ACA.
There's been
a lot of talk of people that's like, I ain't doing it, and I ain't paying the damn fine.
That's right.
So I think that is going to drive some non-compliance, but I don't believe non-compliance is going to be the end-all, be-all. I think the end-all, be-all is going to be that this thing will eventually collapse under its own.
Yeah.
It will fall apart. And it is in the process of doing that. And if you,
you
know.
Dollar?
Yes, and well, the whole system is predicated on
the whole system.
Or currency.
Yeah.
Okay. Look at what's going on in the flipping stock market. I don't know if anybody pays attention to these things, you know, the stock market. But it is absolute insanity. You've
what
got
are
a
they
stock
doing?
Market.
I just watched the silver price.
The stock market's over 16,000. Okay.
Okay.
And here's the thing, and it's really it's basic. It's really basic economics. You have a fixed amount of gold. You've got a fixed amount of silver. You've got a fixed amount of these other commodities. Okay. Now there is a specific amount of production that occurs every day. Or annual. So you can calculate more or less on an annual basis the exact amount of each commodity that's going to be available annually. Why do you think you see these huge swings in the current selling price or buying price of these commodities when demand has not changed? Population of the globe has not increased dramatically, you know, unexpectedly. And supply has not gone down or up drastically from some natural disaster or another. And then you have these things that are called stocks and bonds, and it's really just buying a little sliver of ownership of some corporation.
Right.
And you see that you've got the lowest amount of labor force participation in decades, and yet the value of these companies are these stocks are exploding. They're going up. They're getting more and more volume is being traded every day. Are you telling me that there's new companies being added all the time? And no, I mean, yes, there are new companies, you know, and for every four that open, you know, three fail. So I mean, you know, it's not the volume and the dollar amount daily on the stock market does not truly reflect reality in the business world at the street level in the general economy. Sure. The two are completely disconnected. Now, part of that is technology. Most of the trades now are done on computer. If you ever watch any of the money shows, CNBC, any of those, and they used to do, you know, from the floor, and you'd see all these people running around, and you know, now when you see it, they have this huge area with desks and everything where all these pundits get up there and talk, right? And then one of them will walk out on the floor, and you might see 5, 10 people shuffling around in an area where there used to be hundreds. And the reason for that is they're all sitting there watching a computer screen, and the computer is on autopilot because there is an algorithm. That's dead serious.
There is an
algorithm. It is a mathematical formula. These computers all watch every aspect of every single thing that's traded. If specific triggers line up at specific points, they make a trade, either buy or sell, and it's all automated. It is freaking automated. Okay? And what will happen is it'll go along for so long, and it's built into the system that if there is a specific drop in the market, if all these computers are running along and everybody's fat, dumb, and happy, and all of a sudden they see something they don't like, oh, crap, and there's a 10% or 20% drop, they freeze.
Jeez.
All on their own.
They just
freeze.
I'm noticing silver's dropping. What about gold? I didn't check the price.
You know, I haven't looked, but I'm sure it's down. Yeah, it was down $32.80 an ounce. Silver down 73. Now we're in after-hours trading. Gold is up $3.30, and silver's up 11. I'm telling you.
Holy smokes.
If you've got money to purchase a metal, you ought to be buying, flipping silver right now. Because I'm telling you.
Absolutely.
Okay, you remember me talking about the ratio?
Yes.
There's a gold to silver ratio.
Right. Ratio.
The natural ratio in the earth after thousands of years of mining gold and silver, we can extrapolate that the actual natural ratio is between 16 and 20 to 1. So for every 16 or 20 ounces of silver that they pull out of the ground, they get 1 ounce of gold.
Right.
So that's the natural ratio, 61.
What I'm seeing...
It's 63 right now.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Take you 63.31 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold right now.
Good grief.
That's why I said don't look at the freaking dollar amount because the dollar is done. Look at the dang ratio. That's going to tell you that it's overdone. It's just simply overdone.
What I'm seeing lately now with all the new numbers and God knows who to believe, of course, but I mean, all the pundits out there, all the talking heads out there, and even some of the decent people, you know, like George Will or Peter Schiff. That was great. That was my favorite one of the week. The one you said where he owns everybody's derriere.
Cool. The guy's smart.
Oh my God, he's so Bon Mises. I love him. I mean, he gets it. But the reports, when we look at the true numbers, like you talk about labor participation, the unemployment, the real numbers are huge. This is 1935, 36. These are these levels. This is crazy. Nobody cares. Nobody talks about it. Congress doesn't care because they're probably in on it. I think they're all sociopaths. I'm telling you.
I was listening to a girl today who was called into a radio station in Austin, Texas. And she said, you know, basically, why would I go to work? She said, why would I go to work? She said, my husband, you know, he works once in a while, just, you know, for cash, but not very often. She said, but they, you know, she said, I pay $50 a month for my rent. I get $425 a month in food stamps.
Good God.
If I need to go to the doctor or one of my kids needs to go to the doctor, she said, I can take them. Doesn't cost me anything.
Of course not.
She gets welfare, right?
Oh, God.
She gets a heating allowance. They pay $100 a month for her water bill. They pay $150 a month for her gas bill. She said, why should I work? She said, I can sit around the house. I can play with my children, smoke some weed, and, you know, visit with my friends. I got a cell phone. Why should I go to work? She said, now, I don't blame those people that go to work, you know, so they can say, hey, you know, I'm a good guy. I work for a living, you know. She said, I don't think any worse of those people.
Oh my God! They're funding her. Does she know that?
Oh, she's fully aware of it. She's fully aware of it. And the thing is, the radio show host, and he thanked her. He was very kind and should have been.
Oh my God!
And he said, you know, he says, I want to thank you for your honesty. He said, because a lot of people aren't that honest about it. He said, now. He said, let me ask you, he said, what would happen if they were to end those programs and take it away from you? And she said, well, I'd have to get a job, wouldn't I?
That reminds me of Ben Franklin.
And she asked him, she said, well, let me ask you. She said, if somebody walked up to you tomorrow and said, hey, I want to give you $1 million, would you tell them no? She said, I'm just not taking it all at once. They're giving it to me over, you know, 35 years.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. There's no shame.
But she's right. She's absolutely right. And it's not that she can't work. Why should she?
Because they've got it flipped on its head. That's why Ben Franklin says, when you deal with the poor, and he's not talking about the disabled and the elderly. That's not who he was talking about. He's talking about the able-bodied, make them uncomfortable in their poverty. Hello?
And so does Bill. Absolutely.
I get so frustrated.
This is what I was talking about at the beginning of the show.
Yep, this is not biblical.
It's for me, okay? And this is the point that I think if we're going to have any impact in having discussions with people who don't necessarily agree with the way I see things, okay, that, you know what? I'm not upset with that lady. I'm really not. And I'm thinking, hey, I don't blame you. I really don't. I couldn't do that personally. I can't. I personally cannot do that. I was taught differently,
right.
And I just can't. Now, my problem is that in order to give her those things, they had to be taken from someone else.
Yes. Yeah.
See, and where I have a problem, I don't have a problem with you giving her stuff. What I have a problem with is you stealing what you're giving her.
At the point of a gun.
From her neighbor.
At the point of a gun.
Right. See, that's where I have the problem. It's not the giveaways.
I agree.
Hey, you give away everything you've got, Mr. Government. Just don't frickin' steal it from someone first. And if you do, you're no better than me or my neighbor. And because of that, we're going to incarcerate you for theft.
Wouldn't that be sweet?
See, that's,
in my dreams.
I mean, that's the point. That is the point that needs to be made. Instead of putting the focus and the attitude
on these poor people.
And look, I know what it's like to be poor. Okay? I know. I was there. I'm there now. I'm not wealthy by any
stretch of the
imagination. Well, yeah,
you're poor for different reasons. The damn government
robbing my ass blind, but at least someone gets the benefit of my hard work.
No, you're right. You can't take issue with the people who have been doing this for generations and expecting it on the entitlement handout. Sucking off the teat of the government because that's the way it's been for how long. The fault has to go to the people who are allowing this, and they just keep paying for it, and they just keep bending over, and the government keeps getting eviler.
Exactly. There you go. I mean, you almost can't even fault the thief, because that's just the way it is.
That's
what the guy in the forum told me. That's just the way our government has evolved. And I'm like, you're a freaking moron, I'm sorry. Oh my God! I've got to read you this, and I don't normally like doing this, but he says, I guess I assumed rhetoric in your questioning. I have actually put some deep thought and reflections into this, and I'll be upfront about some experiences and thoughts here. The government has been taxing us since before we. Well, forever, pretty much. There are a lot of hands in that cookie jar. There will never be a time when our tax money is 100% used in the way any of us want it to be used. Oh, stop right there.
I don't want it to be done.
I don't want it to be stolen in the first place, you jackwad. Okay? Now, if it's voluntary taxation through commerce... that's another thing entirely. You think welfare moms or crack take too much of your tax dollars? Of course you do. Because those with both hands in the cookie jar spending our tax dollars on lavish vacations, hookers, parties, etc., want you to focus on that rather than where all the money really goes. Really? Over the past 3 decades, blah, blah, blah. So he says, right now our healthcare situation is a mess. Boy, howdy, you can say that again. But it was a mess before Obamacare. Yep, sure was. So, you know, this one I said, look, well, you know what they say about assuming. And I can agree with some of what you wrote. But I don't give a damn who's in the White House or in Congress. I'm not an R or a D. I know they all suck, with very few exceptions. Saying this is the way it's always been is not an answer. It is accepting defeat. I refuse to be defeated. My questions were directed at how you justify stealing from me or anyone else.
Right.
And how do you determine when theft is theft and when it's taxation for a good cause? The end user of my time and labor and what they do or do not do for a living means nothing to me, and it doesn't alter the fact that you've stolen it from me. Period.
Correct.
Whether it's a dollar
right.
or $100,000, you're a thief and a liar. So I'm trying to understand how anyone can say, well, you know, it's the law.
I said,
you know, it's like you seem to realize that both parties are scum, but here you are flapping your gums with these same old tired-ass damn talking points.
Crap. Yeah, it is. It's just talking.
Oh, man.
Platitudes. Yeah, exactly. Wow.
And truly... Because he did make some good points in the earlier thing that he wrote that, you know, the Democrats promise X and they get into office and X doesn't happen. And then the Republicans promise Y and they get in office and Y doesn't happen. Exactly, because they're all full of shit.
Yes, and that's why I love what Bill says. He says, it's the same stuff, just two different piles.
Right. I mean, you know, the main sewer line comes out of the same giant bloated rear end, and then it forks off into a Y as it comes out of the building and goes across the street. You know, that's what when I started the show, I said we have a single bifurcated
yep.
political party apparatus.
Oh,
and bifurcated means forked. It's one branch. It's one main trunk with two branches, you know?
And they speak with forked tongues.
Oh, my God. Everything they do is bifurcated.
Well, this is the – look, I mean, and I was explaining some of this trying to my mom earlier because in the morning, and I said, well, look, I said we almost had somebody twice with Ron Paul, and I said they did everything in their power, both sides of the aisle, including the RNC, to make sure he didn't get in.
Oh, yeah, hell, he was fighting both parties, even though
he's
registered as a Republican, and he's got to fight both parties to get his butt up there.
She was shaking her head. I said, I know.
I want to tell you
enough
something.
Enough to make you crazy.
You have got to read this book, Devil's Game.
Cool.
It's kind of a dry read, but it really solidifies a lot of things. Okay, and I know I noticed Robert didn't call in tonight, so I hope he gets to listen to the archives.
Right.
Archives are better than Plato's. Anyway. But there is not a doubt in my mind, after reading this from the individual that wrote it, that Israel, the Mossad, created, funded, nurtured Hamas.
Wow.
And the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah. Nothing surprises me with these people. Nothing.
Now, you know, the thing is, I see how this stuff. I've got a much better understanding, and it's one of those things, you know, that okay, it's kind of what I thought. You know, they saw the PLO as a real problem, so they didn't have a problem encouraging and funding. It's going to blow your socks off if you're, you know, an Israeli, a fan of Israel out there. They thought that it'd be a good idea to fund the rise of Islamism in the West Bank, in Gaza. And I forget Rabin, during his administration in Israel, Yitzhak Rabin, you remember who that is?
Yes.
The number of mosques in the Gaza and the West Bank went from 200 to 470.
Interesting, yeah.
And guess who was funding them? The Israelis. Really?
Sure.
And you know, all of this, they were doing, and with Jordan, they were training Muslim Brotherhood members in the Jordanian desert to attack Syria.
Oh my gosh.
This
wow.
is going, you know, this is the 60s, 70s, and into the 80s. And you remember that town, I believe it was Hama, where we had the poison gas attack?
Right.
Wouldn't you know, back in the 80s, that was where the Muslim Brotherhood had a stronghold. They'd had this big, huge uprising going on. And what was interesting is there was a rumor, and I'll have to go back and read through it and get the exact dates. But anyway, they spread a rumor around that Assad had been assassinated. Well, the Muslim Brotherhood just thought that was dandy. They were so happy. They went around the streets just slaughtering people.
Oh, my gosh.
They went around just murdering, government officials and anybody that didn't look like they were a Wahhabist, you know, because they weren't fanatical Islamic enough for the Muslim Brotherhood. And guess what? Assad hadn't been assassinated, and he was pretty friggin' pissed that they murdered a couple hundred folks in that town. Now imagine, you know, he is the president of Syria, and here's this little town off on the beaten path over here of 20,000 people, and these guys have taken up residence, and now they've gone around and they just started killing folks. Well, he was pretty pissed. And then they set off a car bomb that killed 200 people.
My God.
And that was the last straw, and so he sent his military in there and killed the shit out of them. And then, of course, that was broadcast all over television here in the States, how Assad, you know, so you only get to see one side of it, but the crash the Brotherhood. So, hard to say who's on what frickin'.
Yeah, it's like, how many sides of the story do you hear about Benghazi or Extortion 17 or 9/11
You know what's great? Go back and watch the movie Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
Because at the end of that movie, where are they at? Do you remember the movie? At the end of the movie, of course, they were fighting the Turks, okay? So T.E. Lawrence, he gets all the different Muslim tribes, the Arab tribes, to band together. And they march on Damascus.
Wow.
And so Damascus, because of Lawrence, Damascus is divided. It's half British run and half Arab League run, because he is the one that united them and brought them together into an Arab League of Nations.
Oh my God. Jesus.
Now, interestingly enough, the guy that ends up being the head of the Muslim Brotherhood in Syria during all these goings on in the late 60s, early 70s, is none other than the son of the guy that followed T.E. Lawrence to Damascus, who was the servant of King Faisal.
Wow.
So, I mean, they've been playing with these hornet's nests over there for a long time. And as far as I'm concerned, every damn one of them, I don't care if it's Syria or England or even the U.S. government, they get what they deserve when they fool with them boys because they have no loyalty except to themselves.
Sure.
To their clan, their tribe, that's it. And to Allah.
Are you running out of time?
Yep, I'm just about done.
Thanks for taking my call, and I hope to see you at Hoot and Holler tomorrow, and we'll keep going. Thanks
Absolutely.
A lot. God bless.
Thank you for calling in. God bless. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to me ramble on. I apologize. Some nights are better than others. I do all of my shows almost exclusively from my troubled mind. So very little preparation goes into these shows, and I'm sure it probably shows desperately. But that's okay. Guys, we got to keep fighting. You know, for me, this fight, it's kind of like giving up, not going to work, and just going on welfare. I can't do that either. It's just not in me. I'm not built that way. And I'm not built to give up this fight. Because I know what's right. I know what's right in my heart. And I don't want to quit. I'd like to be able to relax and just not have to think about it. But we're nowhere near that. Not yet. God bless you guys. Thanks for tuning in. Doc, Bill, FT, Miss Linda, Miss Yola, or Nick now, our guest. Not sure who the guest is, but you know, maybe we'll continue tomorrow night on the Hoot and Holler show. And there is some economic news that I wanted to go over. There's a lot of goings on the economic front. And, you know, 2014 is not looking terribly promising on the horizon. We've got some serious call signs out there in the marketplace that give me a great deal of concern. So, guys, again, thanks for tuning in. Hope everybody had an awesome Thanksgiving. If my guest is Rod Luke, God bless you, brother. We were thinking about you. We're all still thinking about you. We love you. And love all you guys. Great family to be a part of. Come over to our site, patriotfamilieswithays.com. Stop in and see us over there. Stop in the chat room. You never know. I'll probably see a few familiar names or faces over there. So God bless you guys. And we'll try to catch you right here tomorrow night for the Hoot and Holler show. God bless. Bye-bye.